Happy to be checking back in with the Quincy School Committee Vice Chair Anthony Andronico for an update on the latest school committee meeting. How are you, Anthony?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back again. It's always great when we get to do these updates and let the people of Quincy know what's going on.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity as well. I've got some good feedback. I think I told you before about these interviews that people enjoy hearing kind of an encapsulated version. So it's great to do this.
Yeah, there's always a lot happening. So, you know, the shorter, you know, 15 to 20 minute recaps, I think are good for people as opposed to watching a 3.5 hour school committee meeting like we had last night.
Yes. And you had some, let's start with some good news if we could.
Yeah, sure. So I think some of the best news that we had last night is we officially have a special education director in place. Last night, the school committee confirmed Superintendent Mulvey's appointment of Julie Graham. Julie has been with QPS for plenty of years now, and most recently she's been Aaron Perkins' number two within the special education department. She served as the number two, I believe, for the last year, and has been serving on the SLT for years prior to that. I think her appointment fits really well with what we have in place right now and the goals within special education for QPS as we move forward, in particular as we aim to open the Christopher Learning Center for our special education students in the next few years.
Was it a unanimous vote?
It was. It was the unanimous confirmation, and we're very much looking forward to working with Julie in her new and expanded role.
That's great. And now does she need a replacement for her position?
And now she needs a replacement, yes. But Julie and Superintendent Mulvey will be in charge of filling that. It will not require a vote of the school committee. As a reminder, the only positions that require a vote by the school committee or the superintendent, where we specifically get to decide. And then beyond that, we hold confirmation votes of the appointments made by the superintendent to the special education director and the assistant superintendent. So those are the only positions that we have more direct oversight of. But we know that superintendent and the entire team will do a great job filling that role.
Since we're on the subject of personnel, the superintendent's position's been finalized too, right?
Yes, it's officially done. Last night, the school committee confirmed the three-year contract that we had proposed and reached an agreement on with Mr. Mulvey in our previous executive session. It does require a public vote, and the full information for that contract is public and should be able to be found on the QPS website. But, you know, we have a three-year deal in place, but after, you know, a search during a pandemic, conducting virtual interviews, and I think going through this process for the first time in 20 years, you know, we've gotten through it okay, and I'm pretty proud of that accomplishment.
I had a chance to catch up with previous Superintendent Rick DeCristofaro in his new role as Quincy College president recently, and he said that they're still working together in their new roles for sure.
Yeah. I'd expect nothing less. You know, I think, you know, as much as we try to get rid of Mr. DeCristofaro, I don't think he's ever going to really leave QPS.
I think he's left an indelible mark, that's for sure. Yeah. We talked a little bit about equity and inclusion, Anthony. I know that's a subject that's been on the minds of the committee since the summertime, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a recent subcommittee meeting where we invited counselors Palmucci and Liang over to the subcommittee to discuss their proposal to create a new Department of Social Justice within the city of Quincy over on the city side. You know, it had been mentioned a few times that the position in the department would provide some periphery support to the school department, not necessarily to overstep, but just, you know, recognizing that every area of the city could use a little bit of improvement on this topic. So we invited them in. We had a great conversation for, I think it was maybe 40 minutes or so, just about the vision for the position, some of the things that had come up over the summer in their listening sessions where the city of Quincy could improve. And one of the things that I think I really appreciated, and this happens a lot in local government, is sometimes folks don't know exactly what's already happening. So sometimes a citizen will have a fantastic idea and they're really excited about it. And once they reach out, they realize that, you know, the city's already doing that. So I think a lot of it goes back to the education of what we're already doing, and then we can better identify what more we can do, I think, to progress the city to be a better place to live, work, and raise a family for everyone.
I think it's one of the major concerns that came up, at least in talking to the students, was the experiences they've had with regards to discrimination and racism, and a little bit of bullying too, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not specific to Quincy. This happens in every community, not just in Massachusetts, but the country and worldwide. It's not a unique problem to Quincy, but it's something in an area that we can improve on. And one of the things we talked about at that subcommittee meeting is the proposal that Visions Inc. Has given QPS, you know, through their work with us over the past few months and even, you know, years to an extent. You know, they've recently delivered some professional development to our staff. The feedback, the written feedback that we got from those folks that participated has been overwhelmingly positive. And they had expressed that we hope that we continue our partnership with Visions. But their proposal that they had given us was for them to conduct roughly 40 or so focus groups with members of the community, students, parents, and, you know, their families, staff, administrators, community members at large, to really figure out where is Quincy in Quincy Public Schools right now? Where are the areas where we can best improve? What is the honest feedback? And, you know, what those students that you mentioned a few months ago had asked for were for us to better explore their real feelings and to have someone, a third party, ask about them and hold those listening sessions, because sometimes, you know, even though we might have the best of intentions, if someone from QPS holds those focus groups, we might not get honest feedback. And if we don't get honest feedback, we won't be able to improve. So they put a proposal together for us, and, you know, we're still exploring that, but I'm pretty confident that we'll have a partnership ready to go in the new year to help with those listening sessions.
I know another issue or goal, at least, was to diversify the staff and the teaching staff and the personnel in the Quincy Public Schools. I think Superintendent has expressed that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So my understanding is that Quincy's staff overall is 7.5% people of color. And we have a student population that's, I believe, is 55-56% students of color. So that's quite the disparity. But, you know, one of the things that we had done, we brought in, that we talked about, was the group of teachers that sent recommendations, five different recommendations to QPS on areas where we can improve in this area. And one of the things that we've done from there is, you know, putting an affirmative statement on all of our job postings, not just the standard legal language saying, you know, we're non-discriminatory, but more an affirmation that we have a genuine commitment to diversifying our staff and providing a space where everyone can feel heard, that we've joined an organization that helps provide a pipeline of people of color applicants, you know, within education, where we might be able to find the right fit for us, creating a or better creating a pipeline of students to teachers, or a program within education where we can get, you know, students that are in front of us today to one day be those leading you know, our education teams. So, you know, there are a few different things that we can always do to improve, and I think we have a long way to go. At the meeting where we had compared Quincy, or just looked at where we are, we looked at the communities around us, some of the strategies they've implemented, and I think the team is really dedicated to making progress in this area.
Oh, we just saw at the state level the passage of the police reform bill, which, you know, included some equity issues as well, so it's trickling down. Sure.
I think it's an area where everyone is looking to improve, and you know, each area is different. I don't think I'd necessarily compare policing reform with you know, teaching and education within this realm. I think that, or rather, I think that it can be a little bit different, but it's certainly top of mind for everyone. And I think there's a recognition as a whole that everyone can improve.
How are the Quincy schools coping during the pandemic, Anthony?
So, you know, in general, I mean, we've seen our cases increase a little bit, I think, as has everywhere. You know, we talked with Ruth Jones again last night about community spread and, you know, making sure that you're not having as large of housing gatherings. I think what we saw from Thanksgiving to now is a spike. And, you know, we're hoping that folks take the personal responsibility, you know, over the upcoming holidays to do their best to maintain a distance and, you know, limit their gathering size. You know, even if you're not within QPS, you know, actions of general community members can have an effect on Quincy Public Schools. And, you know, if we are able to increase the amount of in-person learning time, which is, I think, a goal of mine and a goal of my colleagues for sure, because we know students learn better when they're in the classroom. And for us to be able to transition to that phase, you know, we need our numbers to decrease.
Have you noticed an increase within the school system?
Yeah, it's been reflective across the board. You know, the number of cases of folks that are under 18, those that are within QPS, it's certainly increased. There's been a definitely a statistical increase there.
Was there talk of being prepared to go fully remote if necessary? We've seen it. Cambridge, I think, is doing it. I think Milton most recently as well.
Yeah, we haven't discussed that as of yet. You know, Quincy is still, as of this interview, in the yellow zone, according to the state metrics. And, you know, just as you mentioned, where some schools or school districts are pulling back, you know, I know Braintree is looking at increasing learning time in person in January. So I think you have to try to do what's best for your community. And, you know, each community within Massachusetts is just very different from each other. You know, folks' approach is different. I think what might be a concern for one district isn't for another, or vice versa. But, you know, we're just trying to do, I think, the best that we can to, you know, go through a period in time where it's just so unique. You know, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all solution to it.
Has there been any guidance from the state at all about MCAS for 2021?
Not at this time. I know that they did again, delay the ELA and the math section of MCAS for students that would have taken it this past spring. So if you were a sophomore last year, and now you're a junior, you still haven't taken MCAS, you were going to take it in January, but the state has delayed that. So I think that is most likely a sign of things to come, but I don't want to be too pessimistic. I think given the most recent news about vaccines coming to Massachusetts and hopefully starting to be delivered by the end of this year.
You know, there has been discussion that private schools have been fully in person through this ordeal, and that folks maybe are leaving public schools in general to go to private schools. Are you seeing that in Quincy?
I think there's been a slight dip. There hasn't been anything that is so startling where it would make us reassess. But, you know, private schools and public schools are just two totally different animals. You know, for one, private schools function on tuition, and they need to do exactly what effectively their customers would see as the best for them and their families. I think more on the public school side, at least for us, is, you know, our number one priority is the health and safety of our students and their families, and providing a plan that's you know, responsibly gets people back into the classroom.
Yeah. We talk a little bit about the air quality within the public schools, Anthony. That was a big discussion back in the fall.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had Dave Scott, the city's mechanical engineer, come in just to talk about the CO2 sampling that he's done and his team has done within all of the Quincy Public Schools. You know, I think we're very lucky to have such a qualified team that a lot of cities just do not have access to and need to go outside and get a third party to conduct the sampling for them. But Dave Scott and his team have been fantastic. And just some of the numbers that we had, just to give people an idea of what we look for with the CO2, So basically what you do is you take a CO2 reading outside of, let's say, just outside of your classroom, out the window, and you look at what that number is. And then for indoor air quality, you take the sampling indoors, and you want to make sure that the indoor sampling, that the number you get isn't above 700 of whatever outside was. So if outside is measured at 100 parts per million, you want to make sure that inside that classroom, it's not above 800 parts per million. So we measured a bunch of those classrooms, and we always measure the CO2 when there are people inside of them, because when you're breathing and when there are more people in the room, you're producing more CO2. And we only found one classroom that we had sampled throughout QPS that was above that number. We took immediate steps to rectify it. And even numbers that were under that threshold, but maybe a little closer than we like and want to make sure we stay under there. Paul Hines, the director of public buildings, had talked about the improvements that he and his team have made in conjunction with Dave Scott to make sure that airflow and that ventilation is where it needs to be to keep ventilation filtration efforts safe for our students and our staff.
Yeah, Dave is great. We're in a public building here at QATV at the library as well. And he has been here through this building and got the heat working for the first time in like 20 years.
You know, they've done some great work. And I, you know, really everyone on that side and that team, those teams have been working around the clock to make sure that our buildings are in the shape they need to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Are meals still being distributed, Anthony?
Yes, meals are still being distributed, and one of the initiatives that we've had on top of the meal distribution are the holiday meal kits, which I think are available if you call the central office by December 11th at noon. I'm not sure if this will go up just in time, but I know we've been reaching out with our newsletters, and we talked about it last night in our meeting. Ahead of Thanksgiving, you know, the team gave out over 400 meals. And we're hoping that we can hand out even more meals. You know, it's a very difficult time for a lot of families, and you know, we want to make sure that every family has the opportunity to have, you know, a proper holiday meal, especially this year. And I know that Sarah Dufour and her team in the Nutrition Department and Health Service Department have been, finding funding sources to support this. We've got a couple grants to support the initiative. And even last night, we had an anonymous $5,000 gift given to QPS to support their work in the nutrition department. So we're very thankful to that anonymous donor and to the work of QPS to help out families in need.
That's great. I know they gave out tens of thousands of meals over the summertime. So it's really a heroic effort for sure.
Yeah, I mean, food service is very different right now with the grab-and-go meals and even the meal prepping and what meals you're going to cook. So hats off to them. Can't say enough about the work that they've done.
Speaking of grants, tell me about a great grant at Point Webster.
Yeah, so Point Webster, this happened pretty late in the summer, but we weren't sure entirely on details. But Point Webster has been given a $200,000 Green Communities grant from the state. This is going to help Point better adjust to energy efficiency standards and can help with things like heating, ventilation, and filtration. It could be something as simple as replacing all the doors and windows. It can be as in depth as overhauling your heating and cooling systems. So I know the superintendent and Principal Barrett are going to be working together to figure out exactly how to best spend that funding.
That's great. It really is. It's significant. Is that an older building, do you know?
From my recollection, well, it's a little different because one side is newer than the other. But I think overall, I wouldn't call them new. I think it's about time for an update specifically in that area. I think the technology has shifted quite a bit since that building was constructed.
Yeah, sure. Speaking of, any update on the plans for a new Squantum Elementary School at this point?
We did get word that we should expect a decision in the springtime of 2021. So We're on notice to get notice about that information.
Stand by to stand by, as they say.
Yes, but we're pretty hopeful that will come through. I think Quincy has shown a commitment to fund these types of initiatives, whereas other communities might not. And I'm nearly certain that's what the MSBA is checking right now to make sure that whatever communities they pick are genuinely committed to these projects.
Sure, I think Quincy's proven that it is in the past for sure. So, right. Anything else we should touch on right now, do you think, Anthony?
I just think very briefly, you know, we got an update from Westling Architects on the DeCristofaro Learning Center.
Oh, yeah.
And just some of the initial designs for that. The presentation should be up on QuincyPublicSchools.com. But we're really excited for what this building will mean for our special education families. You know, where I think we're very happy to have a partner in Westling Architects, and I'm looking forward to see the development of that building and what it can be over the next few years.
Any other meetings planned this year?
Not for this year, but I think, you know, you never say never, especially right now in the climate that we're in. But, you know, we'll pick back up on our meetings in early January, and that'll include a review of the budget and where things stand in general as we head into the last half of the fiscal year, and even looking ahead into the next fiscal year already to see what, you know, what we might be able to do moving forward.
Sure. I know folks can reach out to you or any member on the school committee, right?
That's right. Anytime at, you know, my email is anthonyandronico@quincypublicschools.com. And I know if anyone's just, you know, curious about what's going on, feel free to reach out to me or to any of my colleagues. Their emails are set up the same way, first name, last name, @quincypublicschools.com. Or you can visit our website as well.
All right. I want to wish you, your family, your colleagues a happy, healthy holiday season, Anthony. Thanks for your time.
Likewise. Thanks so much, Joe. Happy holidays.